In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, September 26, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Industry chatter today, as we do every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. And my guest is Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And the reason I wanted you here today, Larry, is because this is the last industry chatter before fiscal 2013 ends. By next Thursday, we'll be in a new fiscal year. And we may be in a new normal, for all we know, when it comes to shutdown and all that jazz. I remain optimistic that we're going to see something that doesn't cause the government to shut down. I have no idea what it's going to look like. It may be a seven-day CR or something silly like that. But at any rate, the companies that you deal with and the companies that work with the government need to be preparing the same way the agencies are preparing. You've written a fair amount about navigating through the uncertainty, and we're going to link to some of the things that you're writing on federalnewsradio.com. But talk about, let's go through some of the things that you're advising people to do as they're thinking about all of this stuff.
Great way to start, Francis. The companies that I'm talking to, I'm pointing out to them really as much what not to do as what to do. Mm-hmm. There's a tremendous tendency among good, substantial, routine government contractors to try and go that extra mile, even when their customer is facing a crisis. I think anybody would do that, certainly in the commercial world. That's how you solidify your relationships and stand out from the competition. But in the government market, you're actually prohibited from doing work on a, quote, volunteer, end quote, basis during a government shutdown. And, in fact, when the government does shut down, often contractor personnel that work on a government site are not allowed on that government site. So what do you do with those people? That's one of the things I'm advising my clients to do, is to figure out, okay, what are we going to do with these people that normally work on site, and what type of contract are they working on? Because that can be very telling in terms of who gets paid, and by whom they get paid. Because, for example, if you have 20 people working on a government site on a time and materials contract during a government shutdown, it's not clear at all. Actually, I would say it is clear. Those people won't be paid, and you won't be paid for the time that the government shut down. So are you not going to pay those people for the duration of the shutdown period, or are you going to charge them to overhead and take a hit out of your company's bottom line? If you're on a firm fixed price contract, that's another story, because even though the government's not going to cut a check to your company while they're closed, a firm fixed price contract is and should be just that. You will get paid eventually. So those are a couple of things that companies really have to be prepared. The basic thing, as in any type of crisis situation, Francis, is that contractors have to remain in open communication with their customers to understand just what it is that each one of them is going to do.
Mm-hmm. The question that I get more than anything else from the people that I talk to outside of Washington about how a shutdown will work is, will government employees get paid? And, of course, the answer to that is no. And then the next question is, will they get back pay? And that, the answer to that, of course, is requires an act of Congress, but it's happened in the past. Nobody asks about the contracting community. And in this area, it's as important, maybe more important, because there are so many of them.
Certainly in this geographic region where you have so many government contractors, both headquartered and working on government sites, the prospect of a large part of our region not receiving pay for even a couple of days is not a rosy one. And you look at the collateral damage that would be done, all the people that provide services to them that wouldn't get paid and wouldn't have the business. So it would definitely ripple out across the region. And again, I think it's a question about what type of contract you're having, what type of reimbursement you've got going from the government. If it's a certain type of government contract, you're not going to get paid. And while Congress will likely come back by the end of the month and appropriate dollars for federal employees who might miss a paycheck. There's no way they're going to do that for contractors.
All right. You write, since none of us have all the answers here, let's try to forge a road ahead using what we do know. And the first point that you make is, even though we all agree and hope that there's a possibility that it won't happen, we should be preparing for the fact that it could or will.
Well, and I think there are multiple opportunities for there to be a shutdown, whether or not it happens next week or whether it happens around October 17th, when we know now the debt ceiling limit's going to be reached, or whether it happens at a third time when whatever short-term continuing resolution Congress passes, perhaps this weekend, expires. There will be multiple opportunities for a shutdown. So the argument in favor of preparedness, I think, is very strong. And just because you may dodge the bullet this time doesn't mean that we're out of the woods yet. I think until we have a long-term CR or some agencies actually get their full-year appropriations, we're not going to be able to safely say that the shutdown peril for calendar year 2013 is behind us. So, you know, being prepared, understanding what it means to you, understanding that government people are likely going to go to work. We talk about shutdown, and yet every agency has its own mandatory personnel. So the government's still going to be functioning. It's just that people aren't going to be getting paid for it. And I think that's another area where particularly newer contractors may not understand, look, your government counterpart has to go to work, but you can't.
No. So. Now, the way that you lay this out, I think, is really, really good. And we will link this at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You write, consulting firm forecasts are also right. The government's going to spend money. It has to spend money. It will not be closed forever. It probably won't even be closed for long. And yes, we can go on and on about budget cuts and the pressure, and the people in the agencies are certainly feeling that. But the bottom line is, even under the most rigorous scenario that we're envisioning, the Defense Department, for example, will still spend in the neighborhood of $475 to $500 billion next year. And in that neighborhood for the foreseeable future, regardless of sequestration or whatever the end solution is, there's still a whole big pile of money that people will have to dig into.
There is a whole big pile of money. And while we're looking at the immediate impact of a possible shutdown, Francis, I think you're absolutely right. At the most, I would say that a shutdown would last 48, maybe 72 hours at the outside. That's very small and a blip on the larger radar screen for most people and most companies. Looking at FY14, which, yes, I am saying it's going to get off to a rough start, but it will get off to a start. Mm-hmm. And the government does have critical missions that it needs to fulfill. Cybersecurity is not going away. The need to provide for national defense, the need to process food stamp and other direct payments, Social Security benefits, all of those types of things are still going to be done. And, for example, one of the things I looked at not too long ago is I was looking at the DOD information technology spending budget, the contractor addressable spending budget. And, yes, it's true that the Army, Navy, and Air Force are all seeing a small percentage decrease in their total IT funding. But two things jumped out at me. A, the percentage of decrease is rather small. And, B, the numbers that you're still looking at in terms of what each of those service branches are going to be spending on IT are huge, huge. Even the agency, I believe it was the Treasury, that got a 4% increase in its IT budget. That sounds like a lot, but their total number is infinitesimally small when compared to what the Navy is going to spend overall. Mm-hmm. So if you're a government contractor and you're looking for opportunities, there's still going to be plenty of opportunities. And just this week, your colleague, Jared Serbu, put up on federalnewsradio.com a story about the Army finding $175 million to spend on its IT infrastructure. These are the types of things we see, not irregularly. Mm-hmm. We've seen stories throughout the past year, for example, on the scope of data center consolidation increasing because the number of data centers keep going up. So it's not all gloom and doom. There is opportunity.
You make an observation about how agencies are buying that we'll talk about when we come back in just a minute on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest is Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. We'll be right back.
Agency of the Month is brought to you by CenturyLink from this month's agency, Department of the Navy.
Captain Jim Kilby is Deputy for Ballistic Missile Defense Aegis Combat Systems for the Navy's Surface Warfare Directorate. He explains the significance of the next generation of Aegis ballistic missile defense systems.
It's the first program where the Missile Defense Agency and the Navy are jointly producing an integrated program, but it also requires a lot of coordination with the Missile Defense Agency and the Navy.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com.
The secret to being successful is never slowing down. Your agency's mission doesn't have a pause button. And with CenturyLink as your trusted technology partner, you don't have to slow down. Their visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions are backed by dedicated responsive support. Pause button not included. To learn more about how CenturyLink keeps you up and rolling 24/7, 365, visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov.
Ask the CIO is brought to you by LearningTree International. LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government.
Al Trasik is the Chief Information Officer in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence.
Agencies are planning for their transitions into EyeSight. They've already had several iterations of their plans, and now that we have real capabilities in place, we will begin to execute those transition plans.
Listen to Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Get empowered with the IT skills you need to improve performance and help your agency achieve its goals. LearningTree is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government, and they're on GSA IT 70 and MOBIS 874 schedules, which means all levels of the government and qualified contractors get the best tuition savings possible. Save even more with LearningTree's 50% off select IT and management courses each week. For 50% tuition savings, go to LearningTree.com/CIO. That's LearningTree.com/CIO.
Where do some of the country's best of the best college graduates go? Well, if you're in technology, you head to Silicon Valley, and finance, it's Wall Street. And if medicine is your passion, you come here to Kaiser Permanente. What brings top medical school graduates from Harvard, Yale, and Johns Hopkins here? Simply put, Kaiser Permanente lets doctors be doctors, not paper pushers or insurance noodlers. Our unique system of healthcare was set up from the start to clear the distractions and let doctors do exactly what they were called to do, care for patients. Using every resource, every technological advancement, every piece of evidence they can get their hands on, they come here because Kaiser Permanente makes great doctors even better doctors. Where do you go to get some of medicine's very best? Join us at kp.org to find your doctor, because the best of the best members deserve the best of the best choice. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. With a government shutdown threat still looming, we'll talk to the former OMB executive Frank Reeder. He was around for the last shutdown and explains how agencies should cope. Plus, Reginald Wells joins us. He's not only the human resources leader at the Social Security Administration, he's a Service to America Medals finalist. Those stories and much more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And as you're advising people what to do to try to navigate through the uncertainty that we're experiencing here, you write, the government hasn't been shy about providing clues on how it will buy and who will be in control of the buying. And you talk about the role of the chief information officer, and we've discussed that at great length on this program. But I think it is fascinating that there are so many tea leaves out there for people to read, if they choose to sit down and do it, and it becomes a matter of whether they actually get around to sitting down and doing it to their benefit or not doing it to their detriment.
Well, you're exactly right, Francis. And let me just follow that up by giving you an example of a small business I talked with last week in the IT space, established government business, but they don't have any indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts, and the CEO of the company doesn't want to have them, but he's charged his business development person with expanding the size of their federal IT business. And one of the first things I said to him was, look, about 50% of the federal IT spend goes through standing indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts, whether it's the GSA schedule, whether it's GSA's Alliant, whether it's NASA SOUP or one of the NIH contracts. And you don't have to be on all of them, but if you expect to grow your IT business, the government said they're going to be using these vehicles, particularly at year end, but particularly so they can get things done quickly. You're leaving half of your potential business on the table. Mm-hmm. You're not even in that arena.
Yep.
And it just is mind-blowing to me that people look at that and they say, well, I still want to grow my federal IT business by 20%.
Like, and you're doing it with one hand tied behind
your back. Right, doing it with one hand tied behind your back. And to me, while it costs a little something to get on some of these contracts and can be very frustrating, the only other way really to grow your IT business in this market is by acquisition, and that's more expensive.
Yeah. It strikes me that you if you get on an IDIQ, you may not know that you're going to get business. But if you don't get on it, you know you're not.
That's a great point.
You know your revenue increase that way is going to be zero.
Yeah, that's a great point. And in fact, just earlier this week, the Defense Information Systems Agency went out and provided another set of tea leaves along the same line. It said specifically, we're going to be doing a lot of cyber buying for different service branches. In this case, it was the Army. We are going to use standing contracts to make these acquisitions. So if you're interested in doing cyber business with DISA and the Army, that would suggest that you need to have access either as a prime or sub to a couple of those vehicles.
Mm-hmm. When you see people do, and I'm not just talking about this particular person, I don't want to pick on that person, but when you see people making decisions like that that are counterintuitive, is there ever a theme to them, or are they just all over the place because they fall into any number of different buckets?
That's a very good question, and there is kind of a theme that I see for most of these, and that is that's the we don't want to dirty our hands theme. We're very specialized. We provide very in-depth types of services to our clients. We go a mile deep with our customer service, and we don't want to cheapen our brand by being a participant along with a bunch of other run-of-the-mill contractors. I'm not sure that a lot of the companies that are out there doing hundreds of millions of dollars through these contracts would consider themselves run-of-the-mill. And I also think they would feel very highly about the quality of people they employ and their customer service reputation. So you have to kind of get past that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be cynical, Francis, as a consultant, I get paid if they listen to my advice or not. So, but if they want to grow their business, then they have to take certain steps.
Yeah. Well, I understand that you get paid or not, but certainly you want to see people leverage your advice because you give it because you know that it is what is going to make them more successful.
Well, of course. And if they're successful, they'll think kindly of their consultant
yes.
and keep him around as such.
Indeed. Now, you write with the information that we've talked about so far, we can see a little weather forecast for 2014, and it's not as terrible as somebody might think. Partly cloudy to partly sunny with increased activity in the spring. Do you think, regardless, I mean, it's hard to say with the uncertainty, but it seems to me that the model that we've seen this year, the timeline model, could apply in 2014 with stretching out of a CR, nobody really knows what to do, and on and on. We get to February, March, April, and we finally have some finality. Maybe not clarity, but we have some finality. And May, June, July can be, I mean, I talked to a lot of vendors that really booked a ton of business in April, May, June, July this year.
And I think we are going to see a lot of the same things play out in 2014, Francis. I think that agencies have gone through the sequestration exercise once before. And while in some parts of the government, like DOD, it may be a little bit more difficult to hit those dollar reductions, there may be a little bit more specific pain here and there in DOD. As a general rule, yes, we're going to start off slow, but as people understand that they do have funds to spend and that the ceiling isn't coming down on top of them, they will begin to issue RFIs and RFQs in the late winter and springtime, and we'll have a good summer run up into next fall as well. And so it's very predictable, almost going back to what used to be the federal business model. It wasn't really that model in, say, the mid to late 1990s, but it certainly has gotten back to that model now.
All right. You've written some what I consider to be sound advice for people if October, November, December turn out to be a little bit slower, and how you can leverage that time. That's what we'll talk about when we continue with Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Go on, sweetie. Jump to Dad.
I'm not sure, Daddy. The water's cool.
There are moments in life that cause us to hesitate.
Jump right here.
Okay. Here I come.
I got you. Good job.
I did it. That was fun.
But once we take action, we're really glad that we did. If you're thinking about selling your home, don't hesitate. Interest rates are low and buyers are in the market. Every market's different. Call a Realtor today and visit Realtor.com. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Please join Max Kakis, host of FCI Answers, on Friday, September 27th at 2.05 p.m., where he'll be joined by a panel of government and industry professionals to discuss tactical radio communication and networking. The panel will include Brigadier General Kevin J. Nally, Director of C4 and CIO, U.S. Marine Corps. Don't miss FCI Answers with Max Kakis on Friday, September 27th at 2.05 p.m., right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by FCI International and brought to you by Harris Corporation and Raytheon.
In today's digital world, the challenge of protecting the information on which every government agency relies is a daily battle against unseen adversaries. At Lockheed Martin, experience has taught us that cybersecurity must be seamless and embedded end-to-end, that it isn't enough to thwart cyber attacks, but to stay ahead of them through a proactive, intelligence-driven approach. Whether we're helping to strengthen existing platforms and systems, supporting the Defense Cybercrime Center, or developing new cloud-based solutions, the success of the customer's mission always comes first. It is not only Lockheed Martin's leadership in cybersecurity, but our understanding of government agency missions that has made us the federal government's number one IT provider. A cloud service provider that meets FedRAMP security requirements and a trusted cybersecurity provider for the Department of Homeland Security. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
Are you ready to reinvent your career? Let the Virginia Tech Executive MBA program help get you there. This affordable 18-month program is conveniently located in Arlington, Virginia, with classes meeting every other Friday and Saturday. Build your skills and take your career to the next level, knowing that their distinguished faculty offer tools that you can utilize at work immediately. Reinvent your future with Virginia Tech. Now accepting applications for spring 2014. Google Virginia Tech EMBA.
Controlling Norovirus. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Getting norovirus is common. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Aaron Hall says this virus, which is the leading cause of foodborne illness, spreads easily.
People who have the virus are more likely to spread it while they have symptoms and for 3 days after their symptoms stop.
You can get the virus by having close contact with infected people, or touching things that have the virus on them, then putting your fingers in your mouth, or consuming contaminated foods or drinks. To reduce your risk, wash your hands often with soap and water. Rinse fruits and vegetables before preparing or eating them. Disinfect contaminated surfaces. cook shellfish thoroughly, and use rubber gloves if you clean up after someone who is infected. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS Health Beat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Government IT professionals, register today for the Executive Leadership Conference. This government-led education and training event hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council features newly designed interactive workshops. Nationally prominent speakers from within government will share their freshest ideas and techniques for leveraging new technologies and data for mission success. October 27th through 29th in Williamsburg, Virginia. Register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
Now for your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update. Afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour. The University of Maryland College Park welcomed its first class of honor students for its ACES program. Participants in the Advanced Cybersecurity Experience for Students will live together and use special embedded state-of-the-art laboratories as part of a four-year interdisciplinary program. Students will also have deep and sustained engagement with agencies like NIST and NSA, as well as private sector businesses like Northrop Grumman. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour on 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And Larry, we talked a moment ago about how October, November, December may wind up being slow seasons as they were in years, many years ago. You've got a couple of things here that you've written, another thing that we'll link to at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But this is a good time, you write, to get a little bit more in your brain, to get yourself educated and learned up a little bit.
That's exactly right, Francis. I think that most government contractors have rightly spent the last 8 to 12 weeks on very tactical level trying to close business. We're all about getting business in the door. I understand that. And there's a good benefit to having that type of tactical right in front of you view this time of year. But when we get to next week, things start to cool down a little bit because we're in the first quarter. That's the time, I think, to back out a little bit and start to take a little bit more strategic view of how you're going to continue keeping your skills sharp, how you're going to continue keeping your message relevant, and how you can make yourself a better business partner with your government customer, not just for FY14, but for FY15 and beyond. So there are three things I'm telling people that they ought to do in October and November, in addition to scoping out whatever long-term business they want to get in their pipeline. The first is get educated. We all need to have continuing education, whether it's a webinar or a seminar. Whatever it is, we all could stand to have new business skills, new knowledge. A lot of the conferences in our market space during the next 2 months are going to be talking in depth about what's going on with federal budget and spending trends. You want to know that. What are the IT priorities going to be? What are the professional service priorities going to be? And how are those things going to be purchased? So you want to make sure that your knowledge is current. And then you also want to take some time to refresh your messaging. If you've got 2010 messaging and going into 2014, it's time to update that. And I've seen and worked with a lot of companies that have exactly that, either in their printed material that they hand out or more frequently on their websites. If you all haven't gone and looked at your community events page on your website, it's probably time to go there and take down the things that you talked about doing in 2009. You know, just like we have to clean out our refrigerators every now and then, even though your website may not be the principal way people come to you, it is something that a government customer is going to look at some point in the process. And if it looks stale, that's going to reflect on you. And the same thing is true of any printed materials that you do or any white papers. So, because if you've got a white paper that's talking about Y2K, well, it might be time to get rid of
that
and put up one that's talking about cybersecurity. And the third thing is you want to get out and network. And you can do some of that at the conferences and seminars. You can also do a lot of that over lunch and breakfast. If there are people who you know that you've wanted to meet in the government contract community, chances are this is a slow time of year for them as well. And it would be a great time to go out and meet those people, get together in a small setting, start broadening your circle so that, again, not only does that benefit you, it helps you ultimately serve your customer well, because you could get an RFQ or RFI next year for a piece of work that requires something that you don't do. But if you're making a good connection now, you're going to be able to respond to that, and that's going to grow your business, going to make you a better business partner. So while there are, I'm sure it's going to be a lot of dustbins out over the next 2 weeks or so, pushing the paper that's fallen to the floor, it's not just an opportunity to sit back. This is an opportunity, time to use it wisely to increase your skills, keep yourself relevant, and widen your circle of friends.
I hear a theme among each of those three items, and the theme that I hear is laying groundwork. It sounds like this is what you view to be a really good time to prepare yourself for what the busy season is going to be, whether it turns out to be February or March, April, or later in FY14 or whatever. Have your relationships in place, have your knowledge refreshed, have your marketing materials up to date and fresh and new, and really be ready to put your best foot forward is what it sounds like.
That's exactly right. To do business in FY14, you want to have a good FY14 specific game plan, and this is the time to do that. It's an excellent time of year, for example, to talk to contracting officers before they put things in their pipeline for next year, before they have a formal RFP out on the street and they can't talk to you, talking to them about their acquisition approach, about what they think they might do. Those are some of the types of conversations you can also have.
What would be, if you were going to prioritize these, is there a way to prioritize them, or are they all sufficiently important that you should devote a little bit of time to all of them right now?
Well, I think devoting a little bit of time to all of them is very important. But you can do some of these things in a combined manner. Mm. If you're going, for example, to go to a seminar or breakfast to get educated, and you can also use that as an excellent networking opportunity.
Sure.
One of the downsides about webinars, great information, we all do webinars, but it doesn't really provide for the same amount of networking as an in-person conference does.
Yeah.
So to the extent that those types of venues are available in our market, I think you ought to take advantage of them, because you're killing two birds with one stone. So you can make good, efficient use of your time that way, but I wouldn't neglect keeping your materials up to date. Look, even I keep my website up to date. I have somebody that bugs me every January, in my case, about the time to update your website. I'm not going to update my picture. I was much better looking a few years ago. But it's important to keep it up and to make sure that you're talking about today's buzzwords.
Mm-hmm. Larry Allen is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio. And we'll continue in just a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Controlling Norovirus. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Getting norovirus is common. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Aaron Hall says this virus, which is the leading cause of foodborne illness, spreads easily.
People who have the virus are more likely to spread it while they have symptoms and for 3 days after their symptoms stop.
You can get the virus by having close contact with infected people, or touching things that have the virus on them, then putting your fingers in your mouth, or consuming contaminated foods or drinks. To reduce your risk, wash your hands often with soap and water. Rinse fruits and vegetables before preparing or eating them. Disinfect contaminated surfaces. Cook shellfish thoroughly. And use rubber gloves if you clean up after someone who is infected. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Power of Attorney Radio, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Brad Russell, founder and president of the Washington West Film Festival, which will take place on October the 23rd to the 27th here in Reston, Virginia. Power of Attorney is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman. For more information about the law firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Meet the 2013 Causey Award winners, five Fed to have broken down barriers to better the federal workforce. These human capital professionals have made a difference across the federal government, from developing initiatives beneficial to minorities and veterans, to increased training for acquisition professionals, improving labor management relationships, and helping employees wade through sequestration. View our videos with each of the winners and read their exclusive Q&As. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. Search Causey Award winners.
Learn how to succeed in the new federal market at the Coalition for Government Procurement's Fall Training Conference, Wednesday, October 30th at the Fairview Park Marriott. Hear directly from GSA, DOD, DHS, and VA acquisition leaders, program directors from across the government as they discuss GWACs, professional services, and DHS spending goals. Lunch with the Excellence in Partnership winners and network with industry contract managers, acquisition professionals, and business developers. To see the full agenda and to register, visit thecgp.org.
Now your Federal News Radio DoD report, brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. Deputy Defense Secretary Ash Carter is now reviewing the security measures of military bases worldwide. So far, this is the second security review since the Navy Yard shooting. A third review by an independent panel has yet to start. You get your DoD report, brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and you're the voice of reason, is what I call you, Larry, because of things like this that you write in the Washington Business Journal. So what can be learned? You're writing about all of the uncertainty and whether the government's going to stay open or closed and all of that, and all that jazz, as we talked about earlier in the program. You're right. So what can be learned? The storms will pass. By November, when the debt ceiling issue will be dealt with, the wind will die down. Moving further into the next calendar year, we could see increased activity in the spring, as we discussed just a few moments ago. But is it your sense that people in the contracting community are freaking out a little bit about the whole shutdown thing? Or have they become desensitized the way a lot of people in the agencies have to, oh, well, here we go again, and we're just going to have to deal with it and see what happens?
It's interesting because right now, the time of year that we're in, most government contractors that I'm talking to are still focused on getting that business in by midnight next Monday, the end of the current fiscal year. So they're kind of expecting that something's going to work itself out one way or the other. So freaking out, I don't know. Maybe the senior management should be taking the steps, as we discussed earlier, to plan for contingencies. I think that the bigger thing that's probably looming on their mind right now is the potential for sequestration at DOD in FY14 having a much deeper impact than sequestration in DOD did this fiscal year. You know, first of all, it's going to be in effect for the entire fiscal year. Secondly, there are going to be a couple of major accounts at DOD that will be exempt from sequestration cuts, meaning that the rest of the accounts, particularly procurement and research and development, are going to be in line for proportionally higher reductions than an across-the-board cut would otherwise indicate. I think that's gotten a lot of people's attention, Francis, and people are hoping that 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 sequestration, particularly at DOD, won't be in place for the entire fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. Well, the question that I always ask both people in government and people in industry is it the numbers, is it the top line number because of sequestration, or is it the vehicle of sequestration that requires the across the board cuts that makes everybody so skittish? Because, I mean, the long term fiscal outlook for the country is such that federal budgets will have to get smaller at some point, or we're just not going to be able to sustain the continuing debt. And so at some point in time, the curve has to bend toward the lower side, and that means less spending than before.
Less spending than before, and there's a whole lot in what you just said, as I suspect you know. But looking at the addressable part, the discretionary part of the budget where contractors get paid and agencies commit money, I think that people look and see not everybody can provide a cybersecurity solution. Not everybody can provide a cloud solution or data center consolidation solution.
Although it seems like it if you go to an event.
It's true. But, you know, those are the high priority example areas. Those are the things that are going to get funded.
Mm-hmm.
What does that leave for the average guy that's trying to sell a few laptops and a few routers here and there? Well, you know, that makes it kind of a tough business to be in.
Yeah.
Those are the lower priority areas, and those are the things that, while they used to get done during the course of the fiscal year, now getting pushed out to the right, to the end of the fiscal year, so that, you know, you can get happy for the last couple of months of the year, but only if you can make it to the last couple of months of the year, because everything else started out so lean.
When we come back to wrap up, I want to talk more about strategy. We've talked about it a little bit so far, but I'm seeing a couple of different strategies. The companies seem to be coalescing around a couple of different themes when it comes to developing a strategy for dealing with a shrinking budget environment. And I'm going to throw a couple of them at you and tell me what you think when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Back with Larry Allen in just a moment.
Here's John Quirk, CIO at the American Red Cross, on the Are We Ready to Move Mission Critical Apps to the Cloud panel, sponsored by Unisys.
During the Sandy storm, we had over half of our workforce that was in the field used mobile devices of their own, and those systems accessed our activities, our data that was in the cloud, so that they could know where the shelters were and where to find help and so forth. That whole area of mobility and applications is huge to us.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
As a leading provider of IT solutions, Unisys works with government agencies to solve today's most pressing problems and deliver unequaled value. With top client satisfaction ratings, Unisys is dedicated to serving the U.S. government and understands its customers' unique challenges. Unisys helps agencies take advantage of disruptive technologies, including cloud, mobility, and big data, and they leverage their global private and public sector experiences to meet changing needs. Visit unisys.com/federal to learn more.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
Congress recently returned to work with a crowded agenda. Lawmakers tackled three major tasks related to the federal budget: set annual agency funding for the new fiscal year that kicks off October 1st, come up with an alternative to the automatic spending constraints known as sequestration, which are set to take an even bigger bite from federal spending in 2014, and negotiate a raise to the borrowing limit before the government defaults on its obligations.
Hi, I'm Trish Gilbert, Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. I've been an air traffic controller for more than 21 years. I chose this career because it gave me the chance to do something very important. Air traffic controllers like me take great pride in working hard to ensure the safety of 70,000 flights a day in U.S. airspace. We strive to reach the highest level of professionalism. So on your next flight, sit back and relax. We'll guide you home safely. Visit NATCA.org.
Hi, this is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Thursday, October 3rd at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will focus on data center consolidation, progress, and best practices. The panel includes government leaders from the U.S. Army and the U.S. Coast Guard. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Thursday, October 3rd at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by HP, Dell Software, and Schneider Electric.
Be a part of the USO of Metropolitan Washington's annual Stars and Stripes business-to-business networking event and fundraiser for the troops on October 4th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington. Mingle with top corporate executives and celebrities, nosh on great food, and bid on amazing auction items. Join in as the USO Metro announces the 2013 Circle of Stars, honoring the top corporate donors for the year. Event sponsorships are still available. To learn more, visit WTOP.com, search charities.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Larry Allen is my guest. He's the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And strategy, Larry, is going to be tremendously important in the next year to 5 years in the federal space. And I am seeing companies kind of coalescing around a couple of different strategies. One of them you mentioned earlier, and it's pretty cut and dried, you expand by acquisition. And the pros and cons of that have been discussed and debated at great length in this community. Another one is moving into the commercial space much more actively or entirely in some cases than a company does now. What are, in your view, some of the pros and cons for a company that does a lot or all of its business with the federal government trying to expand its commercial footprint, and what are some of the potential pitfalls there?
Very good question. First of all, let me say it's not unusual at all for certain companies to look at the relative growth in a given market and say, well, this now favors the commercial market, so I'm going to do much more there. You have government contractors, particularly commercial item contractors, that have one foot in government business and one foot out. And what usually happens, Francis, is that when the commercial market contracts, those companies really ramp up their federal business practices. And when the commercial market again expands, then they proportionally slow down and decommit those resources and go after the commercial business. I think one of the pitfalls for any company entering a new market segment is relationships. How are you going to develop the relationships that you need to do business with a commercial entity, particularly unseating an incumbent, which is the same type of thing we run into in this market. If you're doing business with one part of a company, is a government contractor, if you're doing business with their federal side, that could potentially be an easier entree for you to their commercial side. But they're different people, and they're going to have different ways of doing business. I think certainly in some cases the commercial market business could be the better margin business for you as a government contractor. And as a government contractor, I think you have some particular strengths. You know the importance of deliverables. You know the importance of contract compliance and making sure that you provide what you say you're going to provide on time. On the other hand, you don't have some of the restrictions on you that you do in government, like sourcing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have some strengths going in if you can forge those relationships. The potential pitfalls for you as a government contractor is the extent that you diversify your pricing and discounting for commercial business, you're going to have to keep a very close eye on what impact, if any, that has on your government business. Let's use the GSA schedules as a great example. In GSA schedules world, your price is based on what you're doing, usually in the commercial market. So if you start fluctuating and expanding your business in the commercial market and offering different discounts and deeper discounts, that could easily get you in compliance trouble with your GSA schedule. And some of that money that you thought you made, you're going to have to give back to the government.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to watch that and have good intra-company communications. It's all about the money you get to keep.
Mm-hmm. That is certainly the bottom line equation in this business. Another strategy that I'm seeing companies pursuing is moving into new areas of specialty or offerings. And I imagine that can be a good thing in some cases and a pretty bad thing in other cases.
It's nothing, and you're right, it's continuing to happen and maybe even accelerating. We started to see this happen, three or four years ago now, in the federal market spend slowed down. Companies were saying, well, what else can I do? And particularly larger companies were getting into business lines that they hadn't gotten into. They since diversified themselves out of that in some cases. But obviously, there's a certain amount of diversity that I think stands any company in good stead. You don't want to be a one-trick pony. And if that, particularly if that pony comes up lame, you want to be able to readily say, well, I have this to do as well. Yeah, so I think diversification generally is a good thing. The danger is that if you do have a specialty where you dominate your market niche and you aren't paying attention to that as you diversify out, somebody else can come in and take over your spot as the subject matter expert in that particular area, and then you are, as they say, betwixt and between, which is a tough place to be in terms of sustaining and growing business.
Mm-hmm. We just have about a minute or so left. It sounds like it just boils down to keeping your eye on the ball.
Exactly. Keep your eye on the ball. When I ran the Coalition for Government Procurement, I was very cognizant of the fact that we were seen as a multiple award schedule association originally, and that's what we did better than anyone else. But I knew if we were going to grow the association, we needed to expand out, and we did. We looked at other IDIQ contracts. We ultimately looked at GSA's public building service and became very GSA as a whole facing. But I was very mindful that I wasn't going to let anybody come in and supplant our expertise or relationships with our schedules side of the house, because that was our bread and butter. Same thing goes through for a government contractor. It's good to have bread and butter. You got to make sure that you keep paying attention to that bread and butter. But if you want to grow your business, you've got to look at some things like diversification.
Always good to have you on the program, my friend. Thanks for coming in and doing it.
Francis, great. Thanks for having me today.
Larry Allen is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and he is my guest on Industry Chatter today. We'll archive this conversation at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.